You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
So some interesting posters went up on light poles in Ireland last weekend, some Pride Month counter-programming. And 10 seconds later, those posters were flying around Twitter. Maybe you saw them. On the poster, on this placard, there's a picture of what appears to be an opposite-sex couple on their wedding day. Now, she could be bi, and so could he, but we're obviously not supposed to read them as possibly bi, because in big block letters right across the top of the poster, it says, "Straight Pride." Then in the fine print at the bottom, it's natural. It's worked for thousands of years. And then again in giant type, and you can make babies. All right. Gay sex, also natural. As Alfred Kinsey said, the only unnatural sex act is that which one cannot perform. Gay sex, also been around for thousands of years, millions actually, and gay people, we can make babies too. We're just not going to make them by accident. And when you pause to consider how much time, money, and effort straight people spend trying to avoid making babies by accident, all those condoms, all those pills, all those IUDs, all those abortions, all that anal, the making of babies part looks more like a bug than a feature. I'm hoping this is a massive trolling effort. Actually, obviously, it's a trolling effort, but I have hopes that who's trolling who isn't obvious here. The bride and groom on the poster are superimposed over light pink and blue stripes. It's literally the trans pride flag. So yeah, here's hoping a trans rights group is behind these posters, and this week we're going to find out the groom is a trans man and the bride is a trans woman and they both identify as straight and they're having a baby and he's the one who's pregnant. In other news, the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops took a step toward denying President Joe Biden, a lifelong Catholic, the Eucharist. That's the wafer they pass out at Mass for you non-Catholics out here, which we Catholics actually believe to be the body, the literal flesh of Jesus Christ, our Lord and Savior. And we wash that flesh down. We eat that flesh. We're kind of zombies that way. And we wash that flesh down with some of his blood, all 1.2 million of us, theoretically, every Sunday. And the Catholic bishops are doing this, trying to prevent Joe Biden from going to Mass, which he's been doing all his life, and taking communion, because he supports a woman's right to choose, which goes against Catholic teaching. So basically, when Catholic bishops aren't raping kids themselves or covering up for priests who've raped kids or, up in Canada, burying the bodies of Indigenous children they stole from their families in mass graves, and I'm not making that up, Catholic bishops are slapping the communion wafer out of the mouth of only the second Catholic president in the history of the United States because he supports a woman's right to choose. Same as 56% of American Catholics. And all the while, doing nothing about all those Catholic Republican elected officials out there who support the death penalty. I suppose by the time someone is old enough to execute, they've aged out. Catholic bishops just aren't interested. And finally, courtesy of Right Wing Watch, and just in time for Pride, comes this sermon from Louisiana megachurch pastor and COVIDiot Tony Spell.
The world needs to see some manly preachers. There's enough fag, queer, skinny-jeaned, homo-effeminate, sissy preachers out there with makeup and mascara on their eyes for the camera. Isn't it about time you get some sweat on your forehead? Isn't it about time you get some dirt under your nails and get some grease on your hands? Isn't it about time you get some blood on your sword? Cursed be the man that keepeth his sword from blood. We need heroes in this hour. Heroes have calloused knees. Heroes might get terminated from their jobs. Heroes might get not get invited to the family reunion, but I'd rather have Jesus than silver and gold.
I don't have much to say about this manly man and his fondness for manly man preachers, except that we all know how this ends. I could go to the trouble of creating a Google alert for Pastor Tony Spell and gay sex scandal, but when Pastor Callous Knees gets caught in a truck stop or a hotel room or a parked car with a married man or a rent boy or a high school wrestling team, I'm not going to need a Google alert to hear about it. We're all going to hear about it because Pastor Spell, he likes to make the news, and that will make the news. He made the news during the pandemic. He announced he would be holding large church services at the height of the pandemic, and he did, and he got arrested, and he got fined, which is what he wanted. One of his congregants died, not that he gave a shit. He assaulted a protester with a bus in front of his church, in front of TV cameras. And just last week, he got in trouble with the law for harvesting an alligator without possessing a license and tag. The law found out about him harvesting that alligator because he posted a video to his Instagram account of him holding up the dead alligator. This is just one of the gators that live in the lake behind his church where he baptizes people. So yeah, this is a man who likes to tell on himself. That sermon, that wasn't the first time Pastor Spell told on himself. And when the police roll up on the pastor in that truck stop restroom on his calloused knees, yeah, let's just say it's not going to be blood they find on his sword. And knowing Pastor Spell, there's going to be video. All right, coming up this week, Dr. Stacy DeLynn comes back on the show to talk about COVID precautions and bachelorette parties. And on the Magnum, author Mark Haskell joins me to talk about his fascinating and hugely entertaining new book, Rude Talk in Athens. All that coming up on this week's Lovecast. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by omgyes.com, a website devoted to women's pleasure. Check it out and get a discount when you go to omgyes.com/savage. Dame Products is a terrific woman-founded company making toys for sex. Developed and tested by real people with vulvas, they're engineered to bring your solo and coupled play to new heights. Visit dameproducts.com/savage to see how they're making the world a better place, one vulva at a time. MeUndies makes feel-good underpants your butt will be proud to wear and you will be proud to be seen in. They will be the most comfortable pair of underwear you will ever own, and to check it out yourself, go to MeUndies.com/savage.
Hi, Dan, Nancy, and the Tech Savvy At-Risk Youth. I am calling today with a success story. I started recently seeing a man who's in an open relationship with his wife. She has a boyfriend, and he was looking for somebody to fulfill his sexual needs. We ended up matching and chatting and having like a really great sexting session first, and then met up that following weekend for a date. And the date was really nice, and we had some really fantastic sex. But one of the things that drew me to him originally is that he is into shibari, and I've been wanting to be tied for a really long time. And so last night, he tied me in a really intricate way. He tied both my legs and then my hands to my legs, and it was so hot just having him like put this rope around my body and hear the rasping of the rope. And he then proceeded to fuck me and finish me off in like the most fantastic orgasm I think I've had in years. Just like so intense. I can't even describe how intense it was. I had heard about like the feelings after being tied. You feel really kind of emotional and slightly vulnerable. And I definitely had those feelings. And after we came, he very quickly untied me and then just held me for like 15 minutes. And oh man, Dan, like if you haven't been tied yet, guys, go find yourself a rigger who's also a magnificent lover. It is just the best.
I'd like to co-endorse finding riggers. That's people who are really good at bondage, people who are skilled at rope bondage, who are also terrific lovers. Congrats to you both. I'm so glad you guys found each other and enjoyed each other. Thank you for sharing your sex success story with my listeners. Listeners, if you'd like your sex success story to kick off next week's Savage Lovecast, give us a call, share.
Hi, Dan. I live with my family in Central America. And we have sent our kids to a sweet little private community school. They've been super supportive and loved and no bullying and their whole lives. So now my 15-year-old, he's in a very safe space, and he has been exploring his sexuality and his gender roles by dressing like a girl in our community, to school and our house. And you know, there's been a series of tough conversations that we've been having around that in our own home. But again, he feels safe to do it, and we are loving and supportive and kind. For quite a while, we've been planning to send him to live in the United States in Colorado with my in-laws in a very white Christian suburb of Denver. So he can have this foreign exchange experience, big American high school, the whole thing. Already was going to blow his mind. I am feeling increasingly more uncomfortable about that decision, considering that he is behaving this way or he is in the process of coming out. I want him to be around us if he is. I want him to feel supportive, to have his friends. And I also recognize that it's already a lot to ask my in-laws here, take my moody-ass 15-year-old teenage son, but oh, by the way, he might be coming out, or if he's not, he's into cross-dressing. So I don't know what we should do, because at the same time, saying no to him, I don't want him to feel that he's being punished. I don't want to send the message to the family that because he's gay, he can't go and have this experience. But I also worry about his mental well-being. I worry about his physical safety. He walked home the other day from the beach alone wearing a miniskirt, and I was like, you can't do that. And he called me a transphobic, homophobic boomer, which I'm none of those things. But I know that violence against trans people is still real, regardless of this bubble he slipped in. So I'm not sure how to move forward. I've felt confident and comfortable in my parenting this whole time, and now having a teenager has rocked my world.
If I had been asked to guess what would be a safer place for a gender nonconforming, possibly gay, 15-year-old assigned male at birth child, I probably would have guessed a suburb of a big city in Colorado over just about anywhere in Central America, but that may just be my own cultural prejudice showing. If you feel your son is safer where you are now, you might want to err on the side of keeping him where you are right now. But you're going to have to let your son participate in this decision. And to make the decision, for it to be a fully informed decision, I think you need to involve your in-laws. How much time have you spent in what you describe as a very Christian suburb? Are we talking about a suburb of Denver? Or are we talking about a suburb of Colorado Springs, which to me just seems like a suburb of a suburb? But to a suburb of Denver, what resources are available at the school your son might be attending for this American high school experience he would like to have? Does it have a GSA, what we used to call a Gay-Straight Alliance, now we call it Gender and Sexuality Alliance? What are the policies? What are the programs at the school to serve and protect kids like your son, kids who are or may be queer, kids who are exploring their gender identity so they can be themselves and be safe? There's a risk of violence. There are people out there in the world who are violently transphobic, violently homophobic. Telling your son that, warning your son about that, is not to be transphobic or homophobic yourself. And you can tell him, I said so. You aren't endorsing transphobia and homophobia. You aren't telling him not to be himself. You're just worried for his safety, because some people are terrible. Some people everywhere, some people in big cities, some people in suburbs in Colorado, some people in Central America, some people everywhere are awful. And your son might want to think about the awful people out there. And this is always an issue. Don't tell women not to like get drunk in a bar and walk home. Tell men not to rape. Okay, we will tell men not to rape, but there are some men who may take advantage, even if we tell all men not to rape, of a woman who's incapacitated, which unfortunately, until we've changed men and made the world safe for incapacitated women at all times, women are going to have to take into account, are going to have to factor into their calculus their own safety, because there are some awful men out there. Well, your son, if he's going to wear dresses and skirts and be a gender nonconforming, queer presenting kid, is going to have to give a little bit more thought to safety then a more gender-conforming 15-year-old boy, wherever he might be, would have to. That's not Mom or Dan, me, endorsing violent homophobia or violent transphobia. It's a shame that he has to think about it, but it's a reality that he will have to think about it. It is a shame that a woman can't go to the bathroom in a bar and leave her drink unattended for a moment. It's a shame a woman can't turn her back on her drink for a split second without having to worry about someone slipping a date rape drug into it. But a woman has to worry, and women are well advised not to leave their drinks unattended in bars. Your son is well advised by his mother and by me to think about his safety when he's walking home from the beach in a miniskirt. Anyway, involve your son in this conversation, in this decision. Also involve your in-laws. If you get on the phone with them and you get your son on the phone with them and they themselves are homophobic or transphobic bigots, if it's not a coincidence they happen to live in a hyper-conservative Christian suburb of Colorado City, that might be something your son wants to take into account before he decides to go through with this plan. You may be surprised, though, to hear that even in a suburb, even in a suburb of Colorado City, perhaps, that there are other queer kids, that your in-laws might know these other queer kids and might know of or be able to track down resources, even in their area, for queer kids, so that your son, even though he won't exist in a bubble where he's 100% protected at any moment of his life from bigotry and potential violence, he will at least have support and have resources and have other people out there that he will feel safe with, in or out of that miniskirt. Psychological research has shown huge benefits to emotional differentiation. That's the ability to pinpoint exactly how we're feeling using words that are more specific than the usual happy, sad, angry, excited, for example. The words themselves are a critical piece of the concept. Assigning very specific labels to your emotions actually enables more detailed experiences of emotion. Sort of like HD resolution versus standard definition, it's also linked to increased experience of positive emotions and enhanced emotional resilience. A new study in the Journal of Sex Research discusses how the sex research website omgyes.com does a very similar thing for sexual pleasure. By empowering users with an extensive and highly accessible library of distinct aspects of sexual pleasure, OMG Yes changes the way that our minds represent pleasure. In particular, users are able to differentiate between and label different kinds of pleasure and kinds of touch in a more nuanced way. That means a more fine-grained understanding of what you or your partner likes, the language to talk about those details, to communicate about them, and a more positive, higher definition experience of pleasure, both solo and with partners. Grow your pleasure palette at omgyes.com. Savage Lovecast listeners always get a discount at omgyes.com/savage. Also know that OMGS is growing and hiring. Right now, they're looking especially for a head of product and lead illustrator. Is that you or is that someone you know? Get in touch at omgyes.com/careers.
Hey, Dan and Nancy and the tech-savvy at-risk youth. My issue started 14 years ago with my stepdad repeatedly molesting me. After I came out about this trauma to my family, my mother denied it, most of it, and is still married to that man today. Flash forward to this upcoming fall, my stepbrother, who is my abuser's son, is getting married. My stepbrother and I have a great relationship, and he is the only sibling that is interested in being involved in my life. I'm so happy for him and his fiance. I would love nothing more than to attend his quaint backyard wedding across the country, but of course, my mom and stepdad will be there. There have been many instances in the past where I have been forced into situations with my stepdad after the truth about his abuse was out in the open. My mom has said things to me along the lines of, "You can't keep us apart," and, "I'm sorry he invaded your privacy and I didn't handle it how you wanted me to." Needless to say, my mom lives in an alternate reality regarding the nature of our family and its past. I've had to hold boundaries with her so many times, the last of which I asked for her to please leave the mention of my stepdad out of all of our conversations. This is something I've had to ask of her over and over again, and finally she seems to be respecting it, only because I threatened her with an ultimatum that our communication would end if she couldn't respect this boundary. Dan, how do I set ultra-firm boundaries with my mom for the wedding? And then how do I enjoy myself at this wedding with an abuser in the corner?
Honestly, I don't see how it would be possible for you to enjoy yourself at this wedding. To enjoy yourself, you have to be able to relax, and you're not going to be able to relax at this wedding. I'm really sorry that this happened to you. I'm sorry that you were betrayed in the way that you were betrayed by your mother. And I'm sorry that 14 years later, you're still having to fight this battle. And it's wonderful that you have a relationship with your stepbrother. And I can't imagine it was an easy choice. If your stepbrother is really a good and decent and kind and loving person and has been on your side, I can't imagine it was an easy choice for him to invite his own father to his own fucking wedding, his own father that he knows abused his stepsister, someone that he loved, that had to have been, I hope it was, hard on him. But here we are. You're invited. Your stepfather is invited. You get to make a choice about whether you're going to go. You say you would love to be there. Well, I think you should call your stepbrother and ask him how he's going to feel if you can't be there for your own mental health, not asking him to revisit the decision about the invite list, about inviting his father, but just to ask him how he'll feel if it's not in you, if you can't come. And you worry that if you do come, it will traumatize you. And even if you get through the day in one piece, it'll be a distraction for your stepbrother. And see what he says. Maybe there's an accommodation here where there is an hour when your stepfather will be asked to leave, sent on a beer run if it's a backyard wedding, and you can drop by in that hour and say hello and then take off. And perhaps the next day you can get together with your stepbrother and his new wife to congratulate them and to spend some relaxing quality time with them that you might actually enjoy. But the question you put to me, how can you enjoy yourself at this wedding? I don't think you can enjoy yourself at this wedding. I also don't think you're obligated to go to this wedding. And if you do go, I think you need to negotiate terms, not with your mother. Fuck your mother. She sounds awful and nearly useless. But with your stepbrother that you love and that you're close to and who has been your ally. Talk with him about how to handle this, about how you might be accommodated at the wedding. Perhaps the idea I suggested, perhaps he'll have an idea. So you feel safe enough where you will be able to relax enough to enjoy a little bit of the day, 45 minutes if you take my suggestion. And if not, then don't go. Don't go. Prioritize your mental health. Send your best wishes. Don't send a broken toaster if you like your stepbrother. Send an actual gift. And then swing through town a couple of weeks later to see your stepbrother, to maintain that relationship, and maybe enjoy a slice of cake if they can pop one in the freezer for you. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Dame Products, a woman-owned sex toy company making the next generation of vulva-tested, vulva-approved vibrators. Founded by a sex educator and an engineering whiz, Dame develops toys with the help of real humans and couples like you. Dame Products is closing the pleasure gap and helping the world one vulva at a time. Their vibrators and accessories are made with medical-grade silicone, the best you can get, smart design principles, and lots of love, and they've earned glowing press from the New York Times, W Magazine, and many more publications. Whether you're a couple looking for an extra boost where it matters or on a journey of self-exploration, Dame Products has earned a spot on your nightstand. Their best-selling vibrator is called Eva. It's worn on the vulva, leaving your hands free to support your weight, move around, and focus on intimacy. This is just one of the many woman-centered sex toys they offer. Dame offers hassle-free returns within 60 days, so your satisfaction is literally guaranteed. Go to dameproducts.com/savage today for 10% off. Let them know the Lovecast sent you. Again, go to dameproducts.com/savage today for 10% off Dame Products.
Hi, Dan. I'm a non-binary, asexual 20-something, and I've managed to find myself a girlfriend. My partner is also non-binary. And the problem is, obviously, I'm asexual or maybe demisexual, who knows. And my partner has been very nice about it, and we've gone very slow. the problem is that they obviously want to go further and would be open to that. And maybe I'm also open to that. But I'm just so awkward. I have no idea how to broach the topic with them or how to say, I want you to go down on me. I know you say to communicate, but how do I do it in not such an overly awkward way? I love listening to the show, and as an ACE person, I find it very fascinating, if not applicable to myself. But now that I'm finally dealing with it in my personal life, I realize I have no charm.
What do you mean you have no charm? Your call, your question, what you just put to me, I was thoroughly charmed. You're asexual. You're on the asexuality spectrum. If you're thinking about and excited about the prospect of your new girlfriend or your new NB friend going down on you, then maybe you're a bit more in the gray ace category, or maybe a demisexual. Maybe it took this kind of connection to awaken sexual desire in you. But if you're thinking about wanting to ask your new partner to go down on you, all right, ask them. You asked me how to ask them. Seems to me that if you can ask a stranger with a podcast this question, if you can force the words out of your mouth, talking with me, knowing that all of my listeners were going to hear you say that, you should be able to say those words aloud to your partner. And if you can't bring yourself to say them out loud to your partner, just play the show, make them sit down and listen to the Savage Lovecast with you. And hopefully your NB new partner, hopefully they'll recognize your voice and they'll hear how charming the request was, how charming your ask is, how charming you are. Yeah, it's awkward, but don't assume that awkward doesn't mean something can't be charming, that something can't be enticing or arousing. It is awkward for you as somebody who's identified all this time as asexual and probably still is asexual. But don't assume that just because you haven't done this before and you're not going to be some, I don't know, slick asexual Lothario when you ask, that you're not going to have the moves means you won't be appealing. Your partner, your new NB friend, is attracted to who you are. And who you are around sex is inexperienced, and who you are around sex is awkward. And yeah, that's not necessarily off-putting. I was not put off, not that you asked me to go down on you, but I was not put off by your call or your question. To the contrary, I found you very charming. And I have to assume your new NB friend obviously is charmed by you, since they're dating you, as you are charmed by them, since you're dating them. So just make them listen to the show with you. If you can't bring yourself to ask, you ask me to ask them, which is kind of bank shot asking them. Seems to me you should be able to ask them yourself. But if you can't, just press play. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by MeUndies, walking their talk with a great donation program. MeUndies is partnering with the Los Angeles LGBT Center. Through their MeUndies Gives initiative, MeUndies is working together, working with the LGBT Center to build a world where LGBTQIA plus individuals thrive as healthy, equal, and complete members of society. MeUndies has made a donation to the center that will provide tents, sleeping bags, hygiene products, and other essentials for homeless youth. It will also help the center provide 22,500 hot meals for homeless youth and more. Join MeUndies as they focus on connecting their community with others and giving back to LGBTQIA plus homeless youth. MeUndies is able to do good like this because MeUndies makes great underpants. MeUndies is all about the underpants. MeUndies, they make the very best underpants. That's why I wear them. And they're the best because they are so comfortable. They're also the best because their colors and patterns are unique and delightful. MeUndies are made for self-expression and designed for you to feel comfortable in your own skin. They offer different cuts for different butts, ranging from sizes XS to 4XL. Whether you're looking for classic colors or bold and adventurous prints, MeUndies has you covered, literally, so you can celebrate you and your most authentic self. MeUndies has a great offer for my listeners. For any first-time purchasers, you get 15% off and free shipping. MeUndies also has their problem-free philosophy. If you're not satisfied with any product for any reason, they'll refund or exchange it. No caveats, no questions. But you know what? I don't think you're going to want a refund or an exchange. I have loved every single item of clothing I've ever gotten from MeUndies, and I have a ton at this point. And you will too. To get your 15% off your first order and free shipping, go to MeUndies.com/savage. Let them know the Lovecast sent you. Go to MeUndies.com/savage.
Hi, Dan. I'm calling with a pride question. I'm a cis hetero female in the Midwest. I am identifying as a demi-asexual. And I'm in a polyamorous relationship. My husband and partner and Meta are all effectively, you know, pretty much regularly identifying heterosexual, with the exception of my Meta, who I believe identifies as pan. But otherwise, we're pretty much, you know, we can represent as straight and out and about and all of that as a, you know, fairly, you know, male-female poly structure. My question is, how does polyamory structure into pride, if at all? There's been a lot of debate in some of the online communities, and I understand that polyamory is not necessarily considered a sexuality, but at the same time, I have a hard time reconciling the fact that I identify more as being off the, you know, beaten path with my polyamory than I ever did identifying as ace, which is, you know, A is in LGBTQIA. So, you know, how does that reconcile? And you know, we still struggle in a lot of the same ways as queer identifying people, and that, you know, I've had to, you know, break my own heart and identify one of my partners as a friend in the same way that gay people may have had to do with their partners and things like that. Obviously, you know, polyamorous people, while we can face some discrimination in certain places, you know, it's very obvious that we don't do it in such the same way as or violent ways as gay and trans. So that's where I can, you know, see, again, it doesn't really qualify as sexuality, but I don't know, kind of rambling, just curious on your thoughts on the matter.
I don't know what to tell you. If you try to draw a line, if you try to say pride encompasses this group, but not that group, you get accused of gatekeeping. But if you don't draw a line or no lines are visible or acknowledged, then pride or what constitutes the queer community can seem to become amorphous or meaningless. That said, some people believe that polyamory is a sexual orientation and a minority sexual orientation. Polyamorous people do sometimes face discrimination. Polyamorous people have their own closet, as you experienced, that you struggle with, that you may have to come out of eventually. And sometimes when polyamorous people come out of their polyamorous closets, sometimes when cishet poly people come out of their cishet polyamorous closets, they face discrimination, they face job loss, they've faced losing their children in custody disputes, they've faced real oppression. Does that make cishet polyamorous people members of the queer community? Well, I guess not. If you define queer as not cis and not het, then no. But it certainly, I would hope, makes polyamorous cishet people capable of empathizing with queer people, capable of identifying with queer people. You point to the A, asexual, in the ever-expanding acronym as encompassing you. Well, some people include P, polyamorous, in the longest versions of those acronyms. There's also A for ally. A is in the acronym in the longest versions of the acronym twice. And it seems to me that if nothing else, a cishet polyamorous person qualifies or more than qualifies under the A for ally letter in the acronym, because a cishet polyamorous person has had experiences that make them really understand and sympathize with what queer people go through. Other people with marginalized identities around their sexuality or their gender expression, more thoroughly, completely, historically marginalized identities. But, you know, where do I come down on all of this? The more people who identify as queer, the better. Trying to gatekeep is exhausting. also exhausting sometimes meeting people who claim for themselves all of the historic oppression that gays, lesbians, bi, and trans folks have faced because their mom didn't like it when they found out that they were in an open relationship. To equate those two things, to equate the experiences of, you know, gay adults who were estranged from their families for decades or all their lives or lost their jobs or lost their lives with having an awkward conversation with a coworker one time or having to introduce one of your opposite sex partners as a friend because you were invested in appearing to be monogamous socially, even if you weren't monogamous sexually or monogamous emotionally, you're polyamorous. Those kinds of comparisons for a lot of gay people, myself included, can seem to trivialize what gay, lesbian, bi, trans people have gone through. That said, I don't want to trivialize what polyamorous people often go through, just as I think a polyamorous cishet person who has faced discrimination or judgment or shaming should be able to empathize with what gays and lesbians and bi and trans people have been put through for millennia. I can empathize as a gay person with what a polyamorous person who's a cishet may have gone through, may have faced. When you say that there was a moment where you had to introduce a partner as a friend and that cut you to the core, I get it. I understand. I had to do that myself too when I was 15 years old, 16 years old, 17 years old, when I was a little bit older and made the mistake of dating somebody who was a closet case. I went through that too. So I empathize. But I'm also capable of seeing these things in their relative scales and keeping things in perspective and proper proportion, as it seems to me you can and you are. But you are welcome at Pride. You are welcome at the Pride Parade. You say you identify as asexual or on the asexuality spectrum. You're in. Welcome. Some people's Pride banners include colors for polyamorous people, and many people who are poly identify their polyamory as a bedrock part of their sexual orientation, or indeed their sexual orientation, their relationship orientation is a kind of sexual orientation. Welcome. No one's going to frog march you out of Pride. And if anyone at a Pride event or in a queer space wants to argue with you about whether you belong, turn your back on them. Walk the fuck away from them. You don't have to win the argument. You don't have to convince everyone at Pride that you belong at Pride to be at Pride. I just opened the show a couple of weeks ago with some people who are going to Pride arguing that kinksters don't belong at Pride and shouldn't be at Pride, even though kinksters have been at Pride and belonged at Pride since the start. There's always some debate, it seems, a useless, futile debate about who can or can't go to Pride, who is welcome, who isn't welcome at Pride. You know who's welcome at Pride? Anybody who shows the fuck up. So show the fuck up at Pride, and then you're a part of it.
Hi, Dan. Late 20s, bi, cis woman here in the Midwest. I just had a question about appropriating LGBT language. So I can't point to exact times on your show, but I feel like I remember picking up the terms top and bottom on your show, like in the sense of when you talk about bottoming from the top and all that kind of thing, and it refers more to people's sexual roles rather than position. So I have some male partners where the roles are flipped. I like to peg them and dom them and things like that. So sometimes I think of our relationships in terms of topping and bottoming. We've had consent conversations where we explicitly use that phrase, bottoming from the top. So I was describing my sexual dynamic with some of these partners to a friend. And he said basically, wait, no, you can't appropriate that term. Top and bottom is a term that refers to gay sex position only. So I apologized. I felt terrible. Now I'm taking it upon myself to educate myself because I obviously need to do that. And I've been reading a lot of stuff online that seemed to say the same thing. So I was like, okay, great. I'm going to strike that from my language. I'm going to do better moving forward. But then last week I heard Dr. Justin Lay Miller reference the new topping book and the new bottoming book. So what do I need to know? So are these terms a little more subjective? Are there nuances to them? Are they interchangeable for dom and sub? Humbly here, please help me out if there's any insight you can give.
Look, if gays and lesbians could appropriate the terms husband and wife from straight people, I think we just need to fucking relax about the term top and bottom, the terms top and bottom or topping and bottoming, which were never exclusively ours to begin with. People into BDSM, people into kink have been using those expressions for probably as long as gay men have been using them. Gay men didn't always describe the relative positions during anal sex as topping and bottoming, didn't use those terms forever. It used to be active and passive. You were Greek active, that meant you were the person fucking, or you were Greek passive, that meant you were the person getting fucked. French active meant you were the person giving the blowjob. French passive meant you were the person getting the blowjob. Those were the terms you saw all over gay personal ads in the 60s and the 70s into the 80s. It wasn't until really the mid 80s or 90s that topping and bottoming took off, not just as descriptors, but for some, problematically, as identities. People into kink, gay and straight and bi, have been using those terms forever, for just as long, if not longer, than gay men have been using those terms. And even if gay men were the only ones who had ever used those terms and we had come up with them ourselves, we took husband from the straights. So I think it's fine for the straights or the bis or people in opposite sex relationships to use top and bottom. Your mistake was not using topping and bottoming in a perfectly appropriate way, in a perfectly legitimate way to describe your sexual activities and your relationships. Your mistake was saying that you were doing that in front of that fucking asshole who gave you such grief about it. I want you to get out of the defensive crouch you're in. I want you to stop apologizing. I want you to stop promising to do. Of course, we should all endeavor to do better wherever we can, but you don't need to do better here. You were doing fine. You weren't doing anything wrong. The only thing you may have done wrong was you may have erred in your selection of friends. All right, before we get to your response calls, let's read some tweets. Blue Monker tweets, "It's so wild that people in loving relationships can put each other's genitals in their mouths, but can't speak to each other about the things they want or need, or finances or marriage. Thanks to people like at Fake Dan Savage and podcasts like the Savage Lovecast for helping out." You are welcome. And bonus pro tip from the Savage Lovecast, it is a good idea. Best practices, only polite, to remove your partner's genitals from your mouth before talking finances or marriage. Rosemary North tweets, "Dan Savage and the listeners of the Savage Lovecast might enjoy this. The this Rosemary refers to is a story in The Guardian about the mixed messages being sent to Olympic athletes by the Tokyo Olympic Committee. Organizers have forbidden any sexual contact between athletes to avoid COVID transmission, but they are passing out 160,000 condoms to those same athletes to take home, organizers say, as souvenirs. So don't worry if you don't meddle, guys. You're not going home empty-handed." And finally, A. Nikki Thomas tweets, "At Fake Dan Savage, there's a huge thing about how DC won't let the creators on Harley Quinn show Batman going down on Catwoman. And yes, it's a big deal because we should normalize sex and sexuality and not shame it or shroud it in mystery." Well, Nikki, it would be hypocritical of me to start caring about superhero movies now after decades of not giving a shit about superhero movies. But I agree. It is fucked up that DC Comics execs reportedly nixed a scene with Batman eating Catwoman's pussy because, and I quote from the Entertainment Weekly report, "Heroes don't do that. Famous Greek playwrights weren't supposed to do that then. Superheroes aren't supposed to do that now," which means we haven't made any progress on this front in 2,500 years. Man, is that depressing. All right, thanks to everyone who posted about the show to your social media accounts this week. We really appreciate it. And if you want me to read your tweet on next week's Savage Lovecast, be sure to use the hashtag #SavageLovecast. And now, listener response calls.
Hi, Dan. My comments are in relation to episode 764 with the male caller who's close friends with the single woman who's in love with a married man. I'm a retired therapist, and this woman's constant exposure to the highs of hope and then the crashing losses can cause changes in brain chemistry very similar to changes experienced with addiction. Over the 4 years, she has experienced surges of dopamine and then intense grief over and over. I understand your comments and agree that this friend needs to take himself a step away from this friendship, but I suggest that prior to him distancing himself, that he recommend that his friend find a very competent therapist. In chemical addiction, alcohol, heroin, etc., there's enormous support available in society to addicts. There's rehab, there's 12-step programs. But being addicted to being in love with somebody unavailable, there's really nowhere to go. And cutting off a supportive friend can throw the person into really unbearable loss. So telling this kind friend to throw a box of Band-Aids at this woman and walk out of her life is comparable to throwing a bag of kale at a heroin addict. A good friend would help lead the addict to some help.
This is a response for the woman who called in about having the dreams that about other people that she wasn't sure she should share with her partner or not. My husband and I have a very similar relationship where that is definitely something I would normally tell him. And he is similarly insecure about those things, sometimes about particular people that I sometimes have dreams about. And what I've started doing to test the waters is sometimes I will tell him about the dream, but I will replace, you know, whoever the person is with like one of my favorite celebrities that he knows that I am very into. And that way it kind of takes that reality factor or like potential insecurity kind of out of it, because it's not like that's ever going to happen. And that's kind of my little way of getting around, you know, his insecurity. So that could be something you could do.
This is a response to the lady on episode 764 asking about furries. It's kind of best to think about it as two fandoms. One sexual and one non-sexual. Especially for fursuiters, the suits themselves are so expensive and difficult to clean that most fursuits are not made for having sex. So at a convention, probably 90% of the fursuiters you'll see, their suits are completely non-sexual. And anyone wearing pants with a fursuit is a decent indication that there might be a hole cut in front for something else to happen.
And we're going to leave it there. Got a question for me or a comment about this week's show? There are two ways to get them to us. You can call us at 206-302-2064 and leave a message. Or you can use the voice memo app on your phone to record your question or your comment about this week's show and email it to us at voicemail@savagelovecast.com. On Thursday, July 1st at noon Pacific time, I will be hosting another Sack Lunch exclusively for Savage Lovecast Magnum subscribers. If you're a Magnum subscriber, you don't need to do anything. We will send out a meeting link to everyone that Thursday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific time. If you're not yet a Magnum subscriber, head to savagelovecast.com and become one. You will enjoy all access, ad-free episodes, exclusive content, and an invitation to these monthly get-togethers with me. Space is limited, so make sure to hit the Sack Lunch link right at me. Follow me on Twitter at FakeDanSavage. Follow Mark Haskell Smith on Twitter at NCurtido. That's E-N-C-U-R-T-I-D-O. And also pre-order Rude Talk in Athens now. It is really, really terrific. Follow Stacey DeLynn on Instagram at StaceyDeLynn_MD. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian, and me and the Tech Savvy At-Risk Youth and Nancy will all be back at you next week with an installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thank you for downloading.